discussing exotic searches with Jets and Missingithi. And maybe the focus of this is maybe a little different from what else was shown today, so I'm not really going to talk about models or anything. It's really just to get a feel for what can be done with experimental techniques. So this is something a bit different that has not really been done before. And we, you know, we played around with it a bit, and I guess we'll see what people think of it. So again, the idea here is it's all in the sake of early analyses. So we want to design an analysis that can be done with early data. But I mean, if you ask me, what does early data mean? It's a question that's free to interpret. But to me, it means, you know, low integrated luminosity. You don't really understand the detector response very well. Hardware could be malfunctioning. Something could be on fire. You know, triggers could not work. Calorimeter could not work. Who knows? So. It's all about worst case scenario in a sense. So we want to. The key word here is robustness, and it's a word that I'll be using a lot throughout this talk, and you'll be tired of it by the end. And disclaimer is this work was done a little while ago, so it was 14 keV back in the day when we were positive and real optimistic. So I guess you can scale the numbers down in your head by a factor of 2 or 3. Or... right. So. Two jets missing ET topology. Pierre showed this earlier, actually. So just an unstable particles being pair-produced. Then you have two jets, and then invisible particles, which give you missing ET. And yeah, these events can be produced by a lot of models. I don't think I'm going to go into this, but you know, SUSY, leptoquarks, etc. And the signature, the kinematics of the event are of course directly related to the masses of the particles in your model, so the unstable particle and the invisible particle. So I'm going to go through the event selection really quickly just to give you a feel for what sort of events we're looking for. So you start only that two jets with PT bigger than 30 because this is a dead jet event after all. Then leading jet PT bigger than 250, and this motivation is purely in terms of trigger. The Atlas trigger, the only trigger that's not pre-scaled for jets, has a cut at 120 GeV, but this is on an EM scale and there's some inefficiency, so it's only really fully efficient at about 250, or it was back when this study was done. So this is purely the motivation for the leading jet PT. Then you've got a missing ET cut larger than 150 because this is a missing ET search. You ask that the jets be back-to-back, and this is just to cut down on QCD backgrounds because in digit events, if you... Yeah, I don't think I'm going to say that much more. And then, as Pierre also mentioned earlier, you know, we do some sort of muon electron veto, so you ask that there are no muons electron in the events. And then if the normal identification is not enough, you can add jet EM fraction and track isolation cuts to remove these sort of events. And the top right, I've put a note saying that you should notice these cuts, none of these are actually model dependent or really motivated by any model, just a signature-based search. So this is where things differ a bit from your typical run-of-the-mill analysis. Traditionally, what people would do is just counting experiments. So you use what I guess can be called as rate information. So you get predictions for the number of standard model background events you expect. You compare that to what you measure in the data. If it agrees, then you're putting new limits. If it doesn't agree, then you found something. And I mean, this can be theoretically done with Monte Carlo-based calculations, or you can do data-driven by obtaining the rates directly from the data. Now, what we're going to explore here is something a bit different. So we've called it the template method, and it's we focus on using shape instead of rate. And I guess that'll become clear in a bit. But the idea is to find the shape of what the standard model backgrounds are, and then use them to do a fit to the data. And the shapes will be obtained using data-driven method, which will be detailed really shortly. So I mean, what is a shape? So the idea is just to pick a variable, a distribution, of that we're going to use to describe the various backgrounds and signals. There's really not much of a reasoning behind what we've chosen here. I mean, we've chosen HT, which is basically a measure of the of the hardness of the event, in a sense. So just the scalar sum of the PT of the two leading jets and the missing ET in the event. And this is a picture of what HT looks like. For example, is it in UNU plus two jets? That's just a picture, really. And this shape is going to be called a template from now on. And the interesting thing with this variable is that if there's anything wrong in your reconstruction, if your gen energy scale is completely off, you'll realize that with this equation, every template is going to be affected the exact same way. So since the systematic effects are removed. So I mean, if your gen energy scale is off by 50%, all the backgrounds are going to be affected the exact same way. So everything's going to be shifted, but in terms of each other, there's not going to be any difference. So the idea, so the procedure and just a few bullet points, is that we get one template for each background. Then we get the distribution straight from the data. We use a fitter, and we just put the shapes of the background into the fitter. We put, give it the data, and we let it fit. And then the fitter itself will just determine where the normalizations are. So there's no actual rate information needed. And then you can apply statistical tests in the end to see whether a signal was detected or not. And so the idea of this is that we just study the feasibility of this approach. It's really a proof of concept with different Monte Carlo samples. So I'm going to do a little shopping list here. This is just a list of all backgrounds, approximately. I mean, there's some things that weren't very significant or were seen not to be significant thrown out very quickly. But I mean, so you've got your Z, the leptons plus jets. And in the case of neutrinos, this is absolutely irreducible because you get missing T from neutrinos, two jets. So there's nothing you can do about this one. You've got your leptons, where you've missed your leptons, they've not been reconstructed, they haven't been vetoed. You've got your W plus to L mu samples. I mean, top is not electroweak, but I've classified it as electroweak for the sake of this analysis. And all that's not fully hadronic will have leptons in it. And then you've got QCD backgrounds. You can have invisible energy in your QCD event. You can have multi-jet event with mismeasured jets, as Pierre mentioned earlier. So it's a bit of a mess. And if we have to get a template for every single one of these backgrounds, the fit would never converge. It would be an absolute nightmare. So if we go forward, though, if you look, so I'm going to wave my hands around a bit here. So I've already removed quite a few of the electroweak backgrounds from this because they were very not significant, very low level. With our cuts, they were, you know, at percent or less level, and they weren't really going to affect the shapes. But you're kind of left with the Z to nu nu, which is irreducible, W to tau nu, and W to mu nu. These are sort of the most dominant backgrounds. And the interesting point is that if you look at the distributions for these three, if they were to fake to come into your background sample, they would actually look pretty much the same. So then the idea is that we don't really need to get a template for each of these. We can just get one template and describe them all with a single template and say, OK, we're going to do our electroweak with a single template. And that's, we've already removed quite a few things. And of course, this will be verified with data. This is purely Monte Carlo based. This is just, again, a proof of concept. But then, you know, so we already start crossing things off. So now we're down to four models, processing the model instead of 10. And you know, some are not statistically significant. Some look the same as the W to nu nu. Then I'll just say that from now on, we're just looking at Z to nu nu as our main electroweak background. Then we're down to QCD. So you need to generate fate missing ET in the QCD event for it to pass your cuts. So I mean, first you can have invisible energy that cannot be reconstructed by a detector inside of a jet. So I mean, you've got charmed bottom hadrons. And that was looked at really quickly and found to be not very significant. Then you've also got detector effects. I mean, typically, you describe the resolution of the detector in terms of a sampling energy resolution, which is they claim to be about 100% over square root of the energy of the jet. And if you try to fake our signature and pass the cuts, it would require something like a 10 sigma effect. So that's really not something that we should worry about. However, there are non-Gaussian tails to the resolution, and there's problems, possible problems with the detector. You could have holes, you could have cracks, and you could completely miss jets. So this is the part that's scary and that we need to take into account. And this will be, need to be studied in the data. So, so then we're pretty much down to one electroweak template, one QCD template, you know, barring a few statistically insignificant things. And then we've got a signal, and that's it. So now, I've told you about what we should get templates for, but I did not tell you how we would get these templates. And this is a study in itself. And this is where the fun part begins. So I'm actually just going to go to the slide quickly. This is the exact same thing Pierre actually showed earlier. So maybe I could have just stolen this slide. But so we want to get a Z to nu nu. We really want to know what this looks like. But we can't reconstruct these events. So we want to get a template for Z to nu nu, but we can't reconstruct neutrinos, and it's a shame. However, what we can do is reconstruct electrons. And we know that the Z to EE topology is the same as the nu. What we can do is remove the electrons from the Kalamata signature from Z to E events. And what we're basically left with is literally Z to nu events, but that we've reconstructed. So if you use this, you can actually get a handle on what Z to nu looks like. Now there are caveats, of course, that we're aware of. So first, the Z samples are very low statistics, and it's hard to get templates from these. So what we try to do is we kind of wave our hands around and say, well, we can use W samples, actually, with one lepton, one neutrino. Instead, we'll remove the one lepton from the detector, and we already have the missing ET from the one neutrino. Now, I mean, can the kinematics between W and Z events be different? That's another question. So the mass of the W, mass of the Z is different. We've got some pretty harsh kinematic cuts, so maybe at this point it's not so important. Also, the reconstructed leptons, your electrons and your neutrinos, have acceptance cuts. You can only measure them within your tracker. You've only got a certain range, whereas the neutrinos can go anywhere. So that's another problem. However, because we're requiring the jets to be very high PT, they tend to be more central, these effects actually kind of wash out. And if you look at it in the end, so if we take W to ENU and W to mu events, rip the electron and the muon out of the detector, we calculate the missing ET, and then compare that in Monte Carlo, of course, Z to ENU, you'll see that actually agrees again quite well. So with a bit of luck and a bit of thinking, we've managed to get a template for Z to ENU directly from data without any need for Monte Carlo except for verification. And we can do that with the data-driven method straight from the data. So I'm not going to talk about the QC template because otherwise I'm going to be talking forever here. But next part is signal detection. So here I'm showing just a plot of different signals you could look at. You've got leptoquarks, quarks, you've got SUSY, and there's different masses. And you can see that basically the higher the masses go, the harder the spectrum is. And in black, you've got the electroweak background. So you can see that, for example, there's some range of leptoquark masses that would be very difficult to detect for us because it's right on top of the background because the events aren't hard enough. So, but it's something to look at. Then I'll show you actually, there's a lot of fit studies done, but this is kind of the most fun one to look at. So we've got one template from QCD that we obtained, a little study that we did. We've got one template for the electroweak background, and we've got one template for signal that we fed in, knowing what the signal is going to look like. And by generating a set of pseudo-experiments, we generate a certain number of events. So we generate 237 signal events, 713 electroweak, 350 QCD. These are all based on Monte Carlo cross-sectional estimates. We've passed these to the filters. We've given it the templates, and we say the fitter, sorry. And we've asked the fitter to fit everything. And as you can see, it actually returns values that are quite nice. It picks up everything quite well. And I guess the takeaway point here is that the fitter can actually put these together and fit it to the data. And on top right, I've put the pull plot for the signal values for, 100 pseudo experiments. And you can see that actually there's no real biases. So I'm going to start summarizing then. So the advantage is that it's pretty much entirely data driven, what we've shown here. There's no direct need for Monte Carlo, except for, cross checks and for the study that we did here. The method is insensitive to modeling of efficiencies and acceptances because you don't care about the rates. All you care about is the shape. And because the efficiencies won't affect the shapes, or we've picked ranges where the efficiencies don't change, it's pretty much insensitive to that. Also, gen energy scale would affect all templates identically, so we're pretty much insensitive to that also. Disadvantages, though, is that we're not as sensitive as a simple rate search would be. This wasn't optimized in any specific channel. We just picked cuts that were determined by detector effect, by trigger, or stuff like that. So it's not as sensitive as a focused, dedicated search would be. But it still looks, so far it looks pretty robust. It works in the data-driven method. We've shown that we can model the backgrounds using actual data. Of course, these assumptions will need to be re-verified in data, and there's a lot more work to be done. And this is the point, that says that this is an early analysis, but not an earliest analysis. You would require about 300 diverse picobarns at 14 TeV to get templates. Translate that to 7 or 10 TeV, that means even more luminosity. So it's a less than 1 inverse picobarn analysis, but it's not a very, very early analysis. So that's pretty much it. Thanks.
I might have said this, but do you know to what extent because you had the three kind of backgrounds that have the same shape, are there signals that have the same shape too that you can count this value?
Yes. So basically, it really goes in terms of how hard the mass parameter of the signal is. So if you look at the leptoquark 250 here, it's right on top of what the standard model would look like. So in that sense, leptoquarks, we couldn't actually really reach back to the Tevatron limit. There's a gap that we can't quite reach. And if we start understanding the triggers better, we can start making the cuts lower, and then you can start separating again. But seeing how hard the cuts are what are shipping the background at the moment. So we're limited by our cuts, and the trigger is all we can deal with.
Yeah. When you make a template for a variable like HT for the background, you don't actually apply this template to other kinematic variables, do you? You just use it for HT?
Yes, yes, that's right. So the fifth is only done in HT, we'll pick one. In fact, our semester, the last time, actually tried doing it with the Cambridge Maths, MT2 instead. And he actually found that it works, but the two should just look different. But yeah. It also works, it's a different approach. And I guess what would be interesting with MT2, right, so for the signals, what we can do with the FIT2 is you can make a signal template and just slide it along and try to pick up what the signal value is. And I think for MT2, you can, I guess using the endpoints, you can even figure out what the mass of the particle you put in is and stuff like that. So it comes with some advantages.
I have the same question. How do you know HT is the best?
It was the simplest to think of at the moment. And actually, I mean, in terms of signal separation, it actually does not work so bad. So we tried it. It's simple. It doesn't depend on too many quantities.
How many different variables?
We've only looked at two, really, because they kind of require you to go back and do a lot of dedicated things, make sure that your templates match and everything. I guess, for HT, maybe it's a bit by luck that HT gives you templates that really match. You know, if you compare W's and Z's, for example, if you were using something different, maybe you start seeing something a bit nastier, and then you have to start making corrections, and so on and so forth. I mean, we're trying to make something as simple and data-driven as possible. So.
Any other final questions? All right, let's get period.